Hello, and welcome to The Wagon, with me, Finty Williams, and my good friend and addictions therapist, John McEwan. Before we start, we want to say thank you to Ibiza Calm, who has made this entire series possible. Ibiza Calm is a residential clinic specialising in addictions and mental health, and we are eternally grateful to them. In this series, we are aiming, with the help of some amazing guests, to shed light on addiction and of the helplessness of addiction and the shame that comes with saying, I'm an addict. Bill, I just wanted to say how unbelievably thrilled and proud we are that you're our guest. It's slightly overwhelming for me.
Fint, I am unbelievably thrilled and proud to be your guest. And you know I mean that because two of the people I love most in the world are sitting around this table.
Oh, that's very kind, Bill.
But before we start, there's something that I personally want to do. You saved my life, and I am really grateful for that.
I can't comment on that, Finch.
And I just wanted to say it out loud and publicly. And now I have.
Thank you. Well, it was a life very, very well worth saving. I appreciate what you say. I didn't feel it at the time at all. I just knew someone I love was in trouble. And it's great that we've had a lot of adventures since then together, haven't we?
We certainly
have. A lot of adventures since then.
I mean, we've had, I think,
we had adventures before then.
We certainly did.
And it was a hiccup, and from which I know you have grown and grown. And that's the big... Listen, you know, in life, what I do, the only thing I do, and the thing I'm best at, is to support talent. That's what I'm put on this planet for. And you are a major talent. John Mack is a major talent, and I'm here to support talent. And the funny thing is, as you well know, as you both know, I don't drink.
And we were going to ask you about
ask that.
I don't drink.
Well, why don't we start with that? What? How come you don't drink alcohol?
I don't like the taste.
Nor did I.
I've got to tell you, if you said to me, Bill, you want to come over and have a few bevvies, and the bevvies were banana milkshakes, I'd be with you. I can't stand the taste of alcohol. I did drink once. I actually did drink once. We went to the Cannes Film Festival, me and my team, and I don't know whether how well you know Cannes, but on the Croisette, it's madness. And you've got guys going round with flames coming out of their mouths and ladies with baskets of flowers and all open their restaurants. And we went to this restaurant and my mates got me an orange juice and I drank it. Oh, that was good. A bit of a tang to it. Then I had another one. Oh, da, da, and they were laughing. Da, da, da. And they'd spliced it with vodka. And all I can tell you is every lady in that restaurant that night got a flower from Bill that I bought from them from the flower sellers in the basket. But I've never done it since.
Well, if that's the worst thing you did when you were drinking, then I wish that my story was the same.
But you know, John, because you and I are together via football, yeah, it's a social handicap if you don't drink. But for me, when I was a 12-year-old to 18-year-old in Liverpool, loving my football team, nearly more than life itself, probably more than life itself. For me to go with my mates and they go in the bar and have glasses of beer and I stood there with lemonade, I felt terrible. I felt terrible. And to this day, I am ill at ease in that kind of situation. And I'm not good at it. I'm just not good at it. I can't join in the... I don't know. You've been in my opening nights, but you've been to my opening nights. You look at me on one of my opening nights and you watch me and I flit from people
you jump
to people
around
to
all
people
the time.
Because I can't join in that feeling of enhancement. Mm. I've seen a lot of people with problems. As you know, if I may start on what brought you and me together hugely, we at Everton, Walter Smith, great man, great manager, said, Bill, how do you fancy Gaz, Paul Gascoigne? And I said, oh, my God, I'd love him. Well, he was having a bad time at Middlesbrough. And he said, look, I've coached him. He's not easy. Will you meet him? So he came to London and he had egg and chips with us in the kitchen. But just kept saying, I want to play for Evington. I want to play for Evington. I want to play for Evington. And, okay, guys. And we talked and I talked about what Everton needs and I took him to the station. And I said, okay, will you join us? And it was like Valhalla to him. He came to us. He was a total joy, a total joy. And I didn't know about the dark side until Walter eventually rang me again and said, I can't cope anymore. I'm going to have to let him go. And I said, why? And he said, oh, Billy's just a disaster because of the drink. And I said, please, let me talk to him first. So he sent him down. Gaz came to see me and we got on really great. And he sat in front of me and he was just a mess, a real mess, and pleaded and begged. And I said, Gaz, would you stay overnight? I got him a little hotel nearby and let me talk to Walter and let me just think it through. And the next morning I got a phone call from the hotel that he'd had a worse than bad night, a really worse than bad night. And he came in to see me and he was a terrible mess. And I didn't know what to do. And I have a great friend called Paul Roberts, who I know because we travel up, another producer, we travel up on the train together, has been through this problem. I phoned him up. I said, Paul, what are you doing? He said, I'm in a meeting. I said, I've got Gaz here and I don't know what to do. And he said, I'll be there in 15 minutes. And he came and he said, I've got someone. He introduced me to John and they sat there and talked a language I had never heard before. I've got two sofas in my office and I sat at the desk. And I heard them talking this language of the nightmare of a hotel room when you're in a hotel room and you see the small bar and you're determined not to. And Gaz's day was he would be first in the training. Mm. He'd have his eggs on toast. The girls in the kitchen would love him. He'd go and do the first team. He'd come back, he'd have his lunch. The girls would love him. He'd then go and train with the academy. He'd then come back and have his tea. He'd then go and train with the youngsters. So his whole day from 8 o'clock to 8:30 at night would be football, right through. Then he'd get back to his hotel room. And that's when the demon started. And I heard this language of, I hope you don't mind me saying this, of alcoholics talking about pressure and about understanding, and it was another world to me. And I just, and I didn't get involved, I just sat and listened, and I saw the calmness and the serenity slowly take over, and I just thought, I've got to learn more about that. And that's when John and I became friends.
It is extraordinary you saying that, because we were having a conversation the other day and we were saying how so often people get referred to a therapist and you go and see them with all the best intentions in the world and it is like somebody speaking in another language to you. And it's only when you meet the person who absolutely speaks your language and absolutely communicates to you in a way that makes sense, like you did to me, John, that everything just clicks into place.
Is it a bit like meeting the real thing in your life? I mean, when I see someone that I think is the real thing, then I'm hooked.
Yes.
I would have thought for you to meet someone that not only understands you, but is going to be with you and follow you through. It's extraordinary. It must be extraordinary. That
it is
gift.
An extraordinary
and
thing.
And from what I know, not an easy one to follow because John and I have spent many years together and he's seen people on my behalf and they haven't gone the distance.
Some of them haven't made it.
Well, all three of us around this table, I can name on one hand five people who I know who didn't make it personally.
Yeah, really?
You know, and it's heartbreaking.
We all have our addictions. I am convinced my addiction is to work. I'm addicted. I can't get
it's a
off.
A big one.
I can't get off that treadmill. Mm. I just cannot. And it's like, I've got to score. I've got to score. I've got to score. And I'm 73. And I still don't know about holidays, relaxation. I don't know it and I don't understand it.
It is kind of the same thing that we touched on before. It's that thing that when you put that thing down, you then have to face yourself. And regardless of what that thing is, to actually turn around and have time with yourself and face up to things that you may have neglected or people you may have hurt, or that's a massively scary thing.
Gaz's thing was from 5 years old, the dressing room. He'd had the camaraderie of the dressing room and the spirit, and he was the centre of attention. And he was coming to the end of his career and knew that was not going to exist. And that was, wow.
Can I talk about the Sharp project in Liverpool and how your help changed many, many people's lives?
Can I just ask you,
please,
does SHARP stand for something?
SHARP stands for Self-Help Addiction Recovery Programme. And I was fortunate enough to work for a charity at the time called Action on Addiction. It's still around. And I'd had a few phone calls. I don't know if I told you this bit. And it was the same old call. Hey, John, how are you doing? I haven't spoken to you for a while. Oh, I just want to let you know Jimmy died. You know, Jimmy would be another old friend or so-and-so had died. And I thought, you know what, there's no real service in Liverpool, this particular abstinence-based service that Sharp ran in London. So long story short, I thought, we're going to open up a Sharp in Liverpool. We're going to try anyway. And, you know, there's a lot of politics in Liverpool, as you can imagine. And
a lot of addiction.
There's a lot.
A lot of addiction.
Well said. And there was a lot of resistance to this particular model that we knew had saved a lot of people's lives, that had helped a lot of people. It's based on abstinence. It's not based on harm reduction or, you know...
I would have thought, John, the thing that I got out of it is it's non-judgmental.
It's non-judgmental.
That was massive for me.
Well, I remember the day you came. I'll tell the story back to front, but when you came in, I think you were with Laurie. And I think you said it was like being in a film set where everyone went round and introduced themselves as an addict or an alcoholic and Bill.
It was like
there.
Something I'd seen on the movies,
yes.
Right? And they were all seated round the side of the room and I...
Yeah. Well, but I got to... I can't understate the significance because I'd been scraping, I'll use that word, around for funding. There wasn't a lot of money around. A lot of the charities you'd go to for support were, you know, they'd given their money away. And I said to him, I'm going to give Paul another mention, Paul Roberts. And because I knew you, you'd kindly allowed me into the director's box. And we were playing Sunderland. And I think it was the last game of the season. And I thought, if I can get hold of Bill, I'm going to ask him for some money for the charity. But I'm not sure how I'm going to do that. So anyway, so long story short, luckily you didn't have a lift home.
We were in the car.
I remember that. I had my Volvo.
We were in the car and darkness was coming down and you were timid and I couldn't understand. And you said that and I said, of course I will. Don't be daft.
Yeah.
And that's what it was.
No, but I want to tell, can I tell the story? Can I even mention the amount? Because we hadn't really been given much money. I said to Bill, look, can we maybe do a penalty shootout at half time or can we raise the awareness for this project? And you said, listen, the half time penalty shootout doesn't actually raise a lot of money. How much do you need? And I said, we're looking at this premises on Rodney Street. And you said, how much is the yearly rent? And I said, it's around 25, 26 grand. And he said, you've got it. Call my office on Monday morning and there'll be a check for you. And I nearly crashed the car. Because
I've got to tell you something. I swear to you on my life, and this is not bigging me up. We were working off an overdraft then. We, you know, it's only
wow.
So,
well, highlights your generosity.
No, well, that's
generosity. Honest to God, it's not generosity. It's privilege to someone to reach out to you and say, "Can you help?" And if you can't, wow. What's better than that? You must find that in your life. What's better than that?
The Sharp program has been a huge success in the city. It's saved a lot of lives, in my opinion. It's affected thousands of families and children who've been through that program. It's getting even more popular over the last 10 years.
And it must have reduced the crime rate.
Well, if you look, whatever your belief about addiction or an addicts, and dare I even use the term junkies, when people get well, they change. They start to contribute. They start to contribute to the community. They stop committing crime. Mm. So even if you don't come from the kind of spiritual, if you like, or the kind, caring perspective. So I just wanted to kind of, and we've got to get you back there too soon, hopefully.
Well, listen, what about the lovely nights we've had when they've come to my shows at the Empire? And most of these people have never been in a theatre before. And they brought their kids and their families. And it's been wonderful to see this. You know, they think theatre's like church. It's something you can only do if you're holy in that. And
so many people have walked past the Empire. You know, you go up there drinking, and it's that thing about the theatre that you don't feel you belong if you're from that kind of background. And Bill opened the doors on lots of occasions. And they were magical nights. Do you think alcohol at times, the way it's kind of in our society, if you had a choice, would you change it or leave it as it is? I know it's a very difficult question.
Definitely leave it as it is. Right. Listen, you know what? People have a right to choose what they want. You know, you put on a fag packet, tobacco kills. That in the main, if they want to smoke, they're going to take no notice. I think there is a good to alcohol, you know. I think it does help. I think it does lift. I think it gets people through terrible, terrible times.
Absolutely.
I think abuse is the problem. Mm. But you can't stop abuse by being abusive and taking liberty away. I've never known anyone who got better from criticism, ever.
No, never.
And that's a mantra in my life. And we say that at Everton, you know, these footballers, these young footballers who we do have set rules for on addiction, and that we do really. But no, I wouldn't be more restrictive. But again, with the ones that I've worked closely with, and there's a big, big star I work with all the time, and he said to me, I had to get down to that gutter. I had to get down when there was, and he said, and I've been bad for years, but there's always a moment when
certainly.
You cannot. There's nowhere down you can go. The gutter looks like up to you, and you've just, and I don't know. That's what I hear, that that's the moment. And if there's a hand during that moment, or there's he or she upstairs looks down on you, says, now I'm going to put my hand out to you, then, you know, we should all support each other at that
moment.
Well,
you very much were my hand.
Thank you.
You put my hand into John McEwan's hand. And that is something that I will never, ever stop shouting from the rooftops.
Well, as I said, you know, I've never been easy with that kind of praise, but thank you for it. And listen, I'm here. Whatever you need, I'm here.
Bill, there's a question that I've always wanted to ask you. Since I stopped drinking, you know, we go to these wonderful parties and there is a feeling of equality at the beginning. And then slowly, especially if there isn't Diet Coke on offer, people go to another place. And I don't feel part of that. Do you ever, as somebody...
Do you mean you now don't feel part of that?
I have to work a lot harder to feel part of that.
I am with you 100%. I mean, in the main, the parties I go to are my own. And I am constantly looking forward to poached eggs on toast when I get back to my kitchen. No, seriously, because I watched... Parties after first nights are always a bit elevated, but I watch the heightened atmosphere and I watch the clinging of the arm a bit more, and I am so pleased that people are having a lovely time. I am so pleased, but I'm not part of it. And I'm part of the fact that they're having a lovely time. That's great, but I'm not part of the place where they're going to. And that's not easy. It's not difficult. I don't want you to think, oh, I'm sitting. But it's... And you know what? and I'm going to go on a little bit here. It's a little bit of a part of why I think I've done okay in my life. Because I was talking to Frank Skinner at the weekend. He came to the Spurs game. And he said to me, and he's right, I know why you do so much. Because you've never lost that time drinking. And he said, and when I look back, he said, it's the time that I put into drinking to now I can go down to pub, now I can do this, da, da, da. He said, that takes, I've never lost in my life that time. And I don't want to lose it now. And I don't want to be that elevated through something that's not me. Would I love to be having a glass of red wine? Yes, probably. I wouldn't mind that at all. And that's why I have no anti-feelings at all about drink. I just don't. But I don't particularly want to get to that place. Of,
was there a stage where that became a problem, that not quite belonging, not quite fitting in? Was,
do you know,
at the beginning, was that more difficult?
It was with my mates, but not hugely, John. Also, you've got to remember, in those days, the drinking for teenagers, the big, big thing that happened was coffee. You know, we'd go to the Cavern, which I loved going, and it would be cordial. You'd buy a Vimto or whatever, and then a coffee, frothy coffee, and frothy coffee. So by the time I moved on, I think you might know this about me. I'm actually shy. I'm actually, and I don't like big, I like this, talking, but I don't like big areas. And I think there's a lot of people like that. And I think that's why a glass in the hand is helpful. So I don't have that. And I do feel a wee bit out of place, to be honest with you. It's grown over the years. I'm not great at social functions. Why? Part of me thinks I've got to be the cabaret. It's my opening night. I've got to go there and do it, and I don't have that thing that the others have. I don't want you to think for any stretch of the imagination it's been a big deal. But Frank saying that to me at the weekend really touched a nerve, because throughout my life, nothing's ever taken me away. You know, you don't gamble, I promise you, during office hours. And if you don't sleep like I don't, you can gamble at midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning. You know, your mum's gambled with me at 1 o'clock in the morning. And loved it. Oh, my God, Finty's mum on blackjack. She had a really good time with blackjack. Have I ever taken you to blackjack?
I've been into the club, but whatever reason, I left early. But
were you frightened?
It's a yet for me.
Were you frightened?
I had a bad experience when I was younger.
That's what's very interesting. Sorry, no, I didn't mean to interrupt. That's what's very interesting, is that it's very easy to, for a certain amount of time, be the sober one at a party. But as soon as you spot the one person who may be drinking too much, I become like a meerkat with a snake.
Do you?
Yeah. I can see it a mile off.
Is that
off.
Now?
That's now.
That's now.
Oh, no, because I was that person.
Yeah, but you know. Is that because you feel sorry for them, or you want to help them, or you don't like what's going to happen? Because that happens a lot, doesn't it? You see someone just on the verge of making a fool of themselves.
Well, you see it like, you know, holding a mirror up to yourself.
Oh, right.
If you point a finger, you know, you're pointing one finger at somebody, but you're pointing three back at yourself. And it's a curious reflection. And yes, because I'm terrible, I do want to help or sort of stand on the periphery and look out for someone so that they don't go to that point of making a fool of themselves. Or
do you know the difficult thing about being me? You don't get it. You don't understand it. You don't understand how that thing in their hand can help them feel the way I don't, you know, because I've never done it, so I don't get it. And it's like I'll say to my mates, well, just tell me what Coke does, or just tell me what, you know. And And they say, well, it takes you that place to that other place, that perfect place. And I say, well, I don't want to go there because I'm here and I want to be able to be where I am. I'm very blessed with my life. But, you know, the gambling was a substitute. I would go out a lot late at night, but it was because there was no plateau there. I found that. And the minute I found my plateau, it wasn't necessary. I'll go out.
Well, again, just quick point on, you know, are you an introvert, actually? You know, not just you specifically, but this idea that do people who don't always feel they can join in or be a part of, you know, do they drink more? Are they likely to drink to fit in? You know, and I know self-esteem's a part of this too.
I tell you the thing I believe in most, John, is we all have our comfort zones. My comfort zone is totally different from yours. It's totally different. Yeah. But I have my comfort zones. And to go outside of my comfort zone is a big deal to me. To go to a cocktail party, to go, that's a big, it is. It's a big deal to me. And, you know, I don't know what yours is, but you know, I honestly could go in front of 100,000 people with a microphone, a football game. But to go in front of 15 Everton players in the dressing room, I wouldn't know what to do. It's outside my comfort zone. And I think with the knowledge of that, you look to the things that help you in that comfort zone. And, you know, I will have to take tablets this weekend to calm me down for a flight. I'll have to do it. And I fly quite a lot. And as again, I'm 73, but I look to that help. Now, I would have thought with alcohol, you look for that help, but there comes a time. Again, I don't know what I'm talking about. There comes a time, does that, when the help becomes the life rather than the help.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
And it just becomes your life. And again, I don't know what I'm talking about, but from what I see from my friends who've come through and talk to me about it, and while, you know, and not just alcohol, let's be honest, very, very heavy duty drugs, they've got through the normality and they think, because when they're in that place, that heightened normality is the normality, and they do outrageous things, and they, you know, and they live outrageous lives, and, you know, and in our business, Vince, there are many people, aren't there, who are outrageous anyway.
Yes.
without the need. But the minute you add some kind of fuel to it, alcohol, oh my God. And that's, I tell you, that's almost impossible to deal with. Almost impossible to deal with.
Yeah. No, I mean, you can see, you know, that beautiful film, you know, Jekyll and Hyde, where, you know, that substance goes in and then there's another character, you know, hello, here I am. You know, okay, it's quite a graphic kind of movie in terms of murder and whatnot, but that's what tends to happen. And hopefully, again, we're going to be touching on that, you know, over the weeks, is that some of our, you know, it's down to physiology. It's down to brain chemistry. It's a psychological thing.
I absolutely agree. And I think it's there without addiction. And, you know, I know in my own instance, someone once was asked about me and they said, he is the most wonderful, loyal, straightforward, giving human being on the planet. And they paused and said, or he's not. And I know, and I know we've all got that about us. We've all got that level where, and it's not alcohol, where something in the brain takes us to another place where we feel we are on a higher echelon than the other people, and, you know. And it comes crashing. And if my mum always used to say to me, son, dine with princes and paupers and you'll find out they're all the same. And listen, it's an ethos that I love. But, You know, it's far too simplistic, far too simplistic. And these podcasts, you know, you might think they're a tiny thing, but wow, if they're out there and they can help just a few people, I think they're great.
Bill, it's been a huge pleasure and honour to sit next to you and discuss these things.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much for listening to The Wagon.
For help and support about any of the things we've talked about today, please visit our website, thewagonpodcast.co.uk.
And if you like the podcast, please feel free to give us a 5-star rating.
We'll see you next time.
Goodbye.